You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, the visual arts, communications, and comparative religion. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Liz Neely, the curator of digital experience at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe. The museum is working on a series of projects to develop new ways of revealing connections between art, archival, and historic home collections to facilitate a broader exploration and study of Georgia O'Keeffe. These projects imagine access to collections through discovery, storytelling, and ultimately a digital catalog raisonné. Liz is a human-centered strategist focused on forming engaging experiences for museum audiences while designing sustainable organizational workflows.
Thank you so much for talking with us today, Liz, about what it means to be the curator of digital experience and the different kinds of digital experiences you have been building and that you're also envisioning building in the future. I wanted to ask about what's sort of driving your sense of need. Do you get feedback from researchers or from other museums or from scholars that helps you sort of say, well, we need to do our digital collections like this, or what we really need is this?
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here. That's a great question, and I think that it comes at us from a few different directions. One of the reasons, especially with our collections, that we really wanted to connect art and archives and our historic home collections, which also includes art making materials like paint brushes and blank canvases, unfinished canvases, canvases that have been cut out so that no one would see what's in them. A lot of people, especially researcher audiences and researchers that are trying to put together an exhibition here or at another place, really wanted to know more. And we wanted to know, like, how are these things connected? So if you're interested in one of the Black Place paintings, then it really helps your understanding to a certain extent to see photographs of Georgia O'Keeffe in a tent at the Black Place, which is what she called a part of the Beastie Badlands, and having tea there and how she would stay there. Or it might be interesting to see the view or a letter about her talking about her challenges with painting or how she feels about a certain painting or how she feels about an exhibition presentation. So what we also found is that in some ways in art history, you can look at, well, there's a material version where you only pay attention to the object and you want the object to speak for itself, which is a totally valid way of going. And then there are other people who are interested in biography and what led to the making, what is the context this was made in. And I think that what we're finding is that our audiences are very, very interested in the life of Georgia O'Keeffe and how she lived her life, how this woman in the 20th century kind of broke barriers to become a famous woman artist that kind of lived the life that she set out for herself, very independent. And that comes from the full spectrum, whether you're someone that visits or an educator or a researcher. What we've seen, and I'm saying this anecdotally, I don't have the stats on me, people are very interested in her life. And so I think we've increasingly added more of this to the gallery, but also that really speaks to our collections as well, because we do have these varied collections. And a lot of her artwork is spread throughout the world by her design. We have wonderful art, but our real strength is being able to tell the art and life. So that has driven how we connect things, how we want to tell a story that more than just the object. And then just moving forward, how do we better allow people to access that from different directions?
So I'm super curious how you did build those connections. And I went down the rabbit hole at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum website, and I thought, I'm not going to look at any of her art. I'm just going to look at her stuff. So I looked at her clothes, and I looked at her books, and I looked at the ephemera from her books, you know, the little things that were stuck in there or whatever. And I was astounded that I could be looking at a pair of shoes, but I could also be looking at the letter that her sister wrote her at the same time she bought the shoes, or If I was looking at a blouse from 1931, then I could see all the other clothes she had from 1931. It's really amazing context for any given item, but there's also sort of these prods of you can also look at all this other stuff that was going on. Or you can just look at all her shoes, right? It feels like magic on the user end, but I'm sure somebody put some work into that and some thought into what kind of connections you wanted to build. And then how did you decide which connections you wanted to make? And how did you build those into the data?
It's exciting stuff. Broadly speaking, there are two kinds of connections. There are ones by association or by a broad category, and then there's direct ones. So direct connections are when we identify that this painting is also in these four photographs. So then that is something that someone here at the George O'Keeffe Museum goes in and types it in and says, this is connected to this. And then there's still a long way to go with those kind of connections. But as we discover new things, there's a method for that. So it's all about designing workflows so that you can capture that. But what you see the most of is our different collections are stored and cataloged differently. But as long as we use standard approaches that are according to museum standards of how you call a date, how you call a shoe, is that a lot of those relationships that you see are then just drawing from that data. So it knows that in 1931, we know what 1931 is. It's in the data that we have. That date one comes in handy for me all of the time because I'm like, wait, what else did I see then? What are the letters that she was writing at that time? What are the letters she was writing after the exhibition about that? For our collections online, we have an open data set, and we don't have to use the open data set to be leveraging the data. We're leveraging that by creating these connections by associations of sort. So no one has to actually type that in. They don't have to type, this is associated with this, and the team is great here. I don't do all of this. There's a full staff of people who are cataloging as long as we all agree on how we're cataloging things so that we can deliver things without someone having to type things in. So it's really using the data to show things that would take years for our museum to tag specifically. And then we would always be putting our bias on top of it as well.
Are you also doing geospatial locations, like physical locations for objects or for pieces in the collection?
We have not done that yet. Definitely, it is of a lot of interest because we did do a project where we found some of the New Mexico artworks and could see exactly where the viewpoint was. And so we could see the 3D view shed. That was done in a separate kind of program. The difficulty and why we just haven't done it is it's just kind of deciding what story you're telling there. For example, George O'Keeffe painted a lot of bones at that time. That confounded critics and was thought of as a very strange thing to do. But we can assume that the bones are from New Mexico, but we can't assume that that was painted in New Mexico because there were also a big box of bones that were shipped back to New York and cost a bunch of money to ship to New York. It's something we'll definitely want to do because it's of extreme interest, but thinking about, well, what does that mean in terms of what are we saying about that piece that has a subject matter that we know is from New Mexico, but it was probably painted in New York, or we don't know where a lot of things were painted. She did not like to be photographed while painting something. Those are the complex tornadoes that go on the head of a museum professional.
And the reason I'm asking in this particular case is because George O'Keeffe, I think for a lot of people, is so much about place. And it would be an interesting lens to look at. But yeah, it gets dicey and cloudy really quickly.
We'll fix it sometime. We definitely will. Some of the themes in our galleries are by place because she was so affected by place, whether that was Lake George or New York. But she also went to a lot of places at the same times. So I guess what we want to make sure we do is that we offer something that's helpful, but not overly simplify it as well.
You've been at this process for a long time. I mean, starting with digitization and building sort of web-based experiences. And you've done some virtual and immersive stuff as well for remote visitors. When you're thinking about, here's how we're going to reach visitors or here's how we're going to engage people, are those audiences, the in-person and the remote audiences, are they considered equally important?
That's interesting. Like, I guess these are about online interpretive experience or access to collections. Clearly, our in-person visitors at some point engage with us online, especially now you need to reserve a ticket since the pandemic. So I think some online visitors become on-site visitors. And I think people who visit us, it's an amazing experience for us. We hope it's an amazing experience for them. Of course, not everyone can come to Santa Fe. So I'm not sure if we have a value scale to say we think about them equally, like one is more important than the other. I think they're just different audiences. And I think that's also a fluid kind of thing. And so I know that when I approach a project, I think more in terms of a role that a person is playing, which is also can change over time. So there is a visiting guest. There are needs like transactional, what am I going to see? And then, yes, how are we going to serve them once they get here, whether it's through interpretive experiences? But online, it can be an educator, it can be a researcher, it can be someone putting together an exhibition, it can be an enthusiast. So an enthusiast audience for George O'Keefe is a pretty large part of our audience because there are a lot of enthusiasts. So we're very lucky in that way. Certainly, numbers online are always, because it's global, are always much larger. But in terms of value, I can't even think about putting that all on a scale. With on-site visitors, in terms of thinking about digital experiences, we have done some study about how people want to engage in different ways. We're actually a fairly limited-sized museum, and so really, how can we expand the footprint of what we're offering through having places where you can dive into more of the experience there and something to slow you down? So it also serves a conservation purpose that we had a show where we showed some late watercolors, but many of the watercolors can only be shown for a certain amount of time because they're light sensitive. And so we could use, you know, a very simple digital presentation to offer a slideshow of other things that you can kind of compare and see, but that we can't show all the time. What we can't show you, we can show some of the watercolors, and these are some other things to look at. With our more immersive gallery, using design to kind of provide a place to slow down and sit down and be in the dark with a very tight. So thinking about those digital experiences on how do we kind of provide a varied experience so that there's a quiet, there's a loud, there's something to sit down and contemplate, that there's a way to see the work in a way that you hadn't seen before. So those are the kind of ways that we think about it inside the gallery.
I think that's where the digital realm can really help. And I'm guessing that the size of the collection in terms of actual artwork is probably, what, 10 times larger than what you could show at any one time or something like that.
Especially if you consider archival and other content. Online, you can kind of choose your own adventure. So that's also quite nice.
Can I ask, this is sort of just a detail thing, but is everything digitized already, even if it's not in some kind of useful database or presented online? In other words, if you have a piece, is it safe to say that it's been digitally photographed already, or no?
If any museum tells you that their whole collection is digitized,
they're lying.
I wouldn't believe it. We've been very lucky. We had a grant from IMLS, which is the Institute of Museum and Library Services, to digitize our art collection. And so that has been ongoing since 2019, and we're getting pretty close. It took a little longer because it's really hard to photograph things when you can't be on site. Part of that was some training so that we have people here that are doing works on paper. So we're getting close on that. Our archives collection will take a while because the volume of archives is just such that it takes a while to describe and to digitize. So it's an ongoing process. And then when you get to the historic homes, we have like a lot of discovery images. So essentially we call a discovery image when it's a snapshot that has a piece of paper that has the identification number on it, which Ellen, maybe you saw when you were deep diving into collections online, because we have published them because we think that something is better than nothing. So by the time we're done digitizing everything, there will probably be holographic cameras and we'll have to start over again. And that's something, that's a format change is a thing. A lot of our collection at the time of the catalog raisonné, the 1999 print one, has transparencies. And transparencies fade in color, they get scratches, they get dust. We are trying to do the process right now in a preservation standard that is up to federal guidelines. But in 20 years, we know that technology. So the work of a digital person is never done.
Liz, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about your work at the O'Keeffe Museum. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And if you would like more information, you can visit O'KeefeMuseum.org online. And of course, the museum itself is in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.